Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
I'm recording here too, yeah.
And on that note, welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery with you, joined by Mike. How's it going, my friend?
Are you in Germany? Official. Oh, that was going for Swedish.
Swedish, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
My wife lived in Sweden for a while. It's very popular in our house.
Yes, well, you've heard my attempts.
I can swear really well in Swedish. That threw you, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, you wouldn't know if I was swearing at you in Swedish, other than tone of voice.
Exactly. So, hey, we're in week number 5 of the term. Things are progressing well. We are actually heading into break week to give those of you who have joined maybe a bit later in the term than the first week a chance to catch up, as well as the profs to catch their breath. But I hope actually it will give people time to actually take the time to do some of the projects that are as part of the courses this term. I notice there's been more and more people each week submitting things into the digital map painting forum, the courses that Ludo is teaching this term. I think that's really a great aspect of the course, and we hope that more and more of you take advantage of that, because it started out a bit thin, I would say, early on, but it seems to be more and more interaction that, and I think the benefit of that course, and the course will be even better the more of you that actually contribute to that. We know many of you are taking that course. We have the ability to check how many people are involved in the courses, so I know that's not the problem. I think it's obviously, for a lot of you, you probably have day jobs. We know that's true for most people who are part of FX PhD, but honestly, it really is a fantastic opportunity to get feedback from someone like Ludo. So we hope you take advantage of it, and also provides the opportunity for others to learn from the work that you do as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then something also coming up for break week this week, and I kind of alluded to this as part of the forums a couple weeks ago. I sent a call out, and I think we talked about it in the DoD, asking people to run some speed tests to various servers that we have the option of relocating to. And far and away, for some reason, we were surprised by this, but we found that Atlanta wins the hosting privileges of the 2014 FX
PhD.
Get
out of town.
Yeah.
Really?
I was actually really surprised. I would have assumed that maybe New York or in the New Jersey area would have been high. Obviously, Jimmy actually did a test from the Sydney office, and it was not surprising that the West Coast was fastest for that. But actually, from the United States, as well as Europe, for some reason, it seemed that the best times were actually in Atlanta. So that's where we're moving the server to over the weekend. We actually did kind of a bit of a test last week on it, and it seemed to work well. So what's going to happen, actually, is this is all going to take place on Saturday morning, Chicago, LA time, let's just say. What's going to happen is we're going to shut down the forums for posting at FXPHE. I expect that will be maybe an hour. But that what that does is that will allow us to actually move the database for the forums from our current server, which is located in San Antonio, Texas, to Atlanta. Like I said, we did a dry run of it last week, and it worked really well. You guys will still be able to read the forums, download your class materials, things like that during that switchover time. You just won't be able to post. And the reason we do that is simply that when we flip the switch, we want to make sure that we got all the posts that anyone had posted in the forums. So that's why we're actually closing for posting for that point. But I expect it will take about an hour to do that switchover. What's really cool, and I'll actually be talking about this in my SysAdmin 203 course, well, I think it's kind of cool, is we utilize this service called Cloudflare, which is actually a CDN of sorts with edge locations around the world. And what happens is that our DNS is hosted through them. And so the fact that all of our traffic at FXPHD runs through Cloudflare in some form or another. And
now,
generally,
John, why would I want stuff to run through Cloudflare?
Well, to protect us from assholes on the web breaking in, but also to provide you, our dear and loyal members, with faster service. Basically, what happens is edge locations around the world, they cache our images as well as our static files. Static files are things like scripts, CSS files, fonts, and things like that that don't change. Those get all cached at locations all around the world. So there's a point of presence in Sydney. There's several in Europe, several in the States. And what that means that if you're located in Australia, like you, Mike, when you access FXPHD, you'll get quite a bit of information from the server in the United States. But all the things like images and static files that really don't change, all those actually are served to you from a point of presence in Sydney. And basically all that means, or what that means, is you get a faster web loading experience because you don't have that latency of crossing the ocean. I mean, you have great internet connectivity to LA, obviously, but it still takes some time to traverse the ocean. And this, you know, this makes it a lot faster in response and loading up web pages. Similar to those of you in Europe, you'd probably get your a lot of our FXPHD images, the JPEG images, the logo, that stuff from either London or I think it's Amsterdam where another point of presence is. So while we're moving a server, a great majority of this stuff is actually kind of coming from locations near you. But anyway, that's a long story of what Cloudflare does. But one of the benefits of that is that when you switch over a site from one machine to another, usually what you're doing is you're adjusting the DNS records, which basically tell the interwebs where to find that server. So you type in a server name, www.fxphd.com, goes out and looks up that address of where that machine address is, returns that, and then your web browser contacts that machine. When you make a server change, generally, when you change your DNS, it takes anywhere from 2 to 24 hours even for that change to propagate across the internet in general. Because those things get cached around the web because they can't be checking that every single time. Well, with Cloudflare, all we have to do is flip the switch, tell Cloudflare that we moved our machine. Instantaneously, it happens transparent to you. So 1 minute you might be looking at 1 minute you might be looking at FXPHD, our current one in Texas, and the next minute you're looking at the site that looks hopefully identically the same, but is actually the new server that's located in Atlanta. I'm sure there'll be some hitches. There always are. Like I said, we did a run through last weekend and it worked well, but you know, things happen. It's not always perfect, but again, it should be really transparent for those of you over the weekend. The only hitch I think you'll see is that what I mentioned earlier is you won't be able to post in the forums for an hour. So we'll see how it goes.
See how it goes. Well, thanks for doing all that.
Yeah, it's going well. And again, what it's going to do is actually the server is faster. It's a newer architecture than the old server. And it will allow us to also do upgrades and keep current with security patches and things like that. Because if you haven't seen or read in the news anywhere of hackers breaking in to get credit cards, things like that, there are a lot of people trying to do that around. So it's just always good to keep top of that. You know, we're very much on top of that now. It's just in the future, moving forward, we wouldn't be able to keep updated unless we move now. It's kind of proactive, I guess you could say.
Right. So I think I said this last time. Bottom line is, if I'm a user, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah. Yes. I just basically spent 5 minutes telling you guys you don't need to do anything.
Well,
no, I'm kidding.
There's educational value in understanding what the hell you're doing.
I know, I'm kidding.
But I'm just, you know, like, it take
is. Out. You don't have to do anything. Actually, you know what? What would be really helpful, and I think we also talked about this, Mike is really helpful in doing this, is that if you do see something after we made the change that doesn't work, doesn't seems amiss, please fill out a support form, let us know. Because we don't necessarily know everything that's going on based upon your particular user, your web browser, whatever. So we always actually prefer someone mentioning something than actually just going, well, that's the way it's supposed to work, or I'm going to try again later, and maybe it'll be working. We really actually do like to know that. I mean, we work really hard to make sure stuff works. It's not a problem at all to know something isn't working. So if you want to do that, that's really helpful.
Nor is it a problem. Yeah, nor is it a problem if you think someone else might have emailed it.
Because
sometimes it's actually quite handy to have it. Because, you know, like, I'll give you guys an example. We often don't have a problem because we're admin level on things. And so depending on what level you are addressing a server can obviously make a big difference to what happens. And so, you know, quite often Ian or I or somebody will send something to John, and somebody else will also send something to John. And it's actually useful because we're at different levels of kind of read, write, control, etc. And so it's helpful, yeah. So it's not... like redundancy isn't a problem either.
Yeah, and it's also is true that we check things in various web browsers. You know, we test all Firefox, Chrome, Internet Explorer and Safari. But things vary, and Christos actually did a cool new promo for RenderMan 102. And when you play it back in the two versions of Mac and even Windows that I'm using, it works, looks totally fine. But there is a bug in like 10.8.5, which is an older operating system. We're on 10.10, right, at this point, that makes stuff look a little jaggy. I didn't know that because my 10.8 system is being repaired. So I can't look at that. And frankly, I don't check every single thing every time. So we actually rely on you guys to actually point things out for us. And again, it's not a problem. It's taken me probably, 7 years, Mike, to convince you that it's not a problem to email me when you see stuff. Because, you know, the natural inclination is you don't want to bother someone. I totally get that, you know, or you assume that we know it's there.
Well, plus you can be pretty bitchy. No, I'm just kidding. No, but yeah, it is true. It's really helpful. And here's the other thing, I guess the other thing is we're a relatively small community by internet standards.
Yeah.
I think we're a really good community and a really tight community, and I friggin' love it as a community, but it's just not a, you know, 700,000 user community on PhD. And so, yeah, so that's why also it's really good to get stuff from you guys.
Yes, very much so. So anyway, that's our plans for the weekend coming up. There are some benefits as well that some of the files are going to be hosted in places that should be faster for you guys. And generally, not that we're really unreliable, but they should in general be more reliable for you guys. And yeah, should be all in all a good thing.
Hey, changing subject slightly, did you, the Oscar race is just starting, and the films for animated consideration are out, there are like 20 of them, and we have a good Australian contingent this time, the Lego movie, but How to Train Your Dragon 2 is obviously a major contender, and Hero 6, which is about to open, is also a huge major contender. We had a huge amount of support for the story we ran on the renderer from Big Hero 6, and John, you have a... interview that we'll be posting as part of FX Guide TV any second now as Big Hero 6 opens on November 7th, which is like, what, 3 days in the US and 2 days here.
Yeah, it's interesting too, isn't it, that Pixar.
Well, except
so to speak, except though, I guess you could...
You could argue Big Hero
6 very,
is,
very much so. Disney. Yeah, that's fair enough, I guess.
But Box Trolls is also in there, of course, for consideration. I think there are some funny films like Penguins of Madagascar that I don't think are necessarily going to get, you know, particularly identified because they kind of feel very much like sequels of sequels. And yet they're probably pretty funny films. You know, Rio 2 I'd put in the same kind of... And then there are films that I don't think are very good at all, like Planes, Fire and Rescue, which is the Disney should-be-direct-to-video version, the rip-off of the Cars sequel that wasn't done by Pixar that has nothing to do with anything. And Peabody and Sherman, which I don't know anything about because I never saw it, but then I wasn't alone in not seeing it. But there are other ones, as I say, like Lego Movie, which are just cracking films. And Box Trolls is a superb piece of... you know, animation, both physical and 3D. I mean, it's a remarkable piece of, you know, artistry.
Yeah, it is. It's actually seems to be kind of a tough crowd this year, honestly. I mean, I think there are more potentials for some really great animated films out there that it's kind of a tough decision, honestly.
Though, tell me, real or not real, yeah? You haven't seen the list, have you?
What's that?
You haven't seen the list, have
not
you?
The full list, no.
Okay, okay. So I'm going to name three films, and one of these isn't a real film. Ready? Jack and the Cuckoo Clock Heart, Valley of the Lost Aunts, and Where is Auntie? Which one of those, if any of those, have you heard of any of those? And which one of those is fake?
All of them.
No, the first two are real films and in contention for the Oscar. Well, they're in contention, they're in like the consideration list, yeah.
Right.
I have not heard of Valley of the Lost Ants, nor have I heard of Jack and the Cuckoo Clock Heart. That's not to say they're bad films. I haven't heard of The Hero of Color City either. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've not heard of those.
No. Well, you see, the other thing is they might be strong films in a different language region.
Of course. Right? Of course.
But, yeah, obviously, from my point of view, being an Australian, Lego Movie, everything's awesome. And but, we want that to win.
Yeah, and certainly insight into that season coming up because my mailbox has been filled each and every day with invites to screenings and so forth that are going on in LA and elsewhere. You can tell that we're starting to hit the promotion for award season in full gear. I know it's coming around the corner.
Yeah, yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what happens in visual effects as well. Once the stuff, and of course, the one that I'm really interested in is Cytex, because you know, the list, as we've discussed in the past, comes out of things that they're considering, and then the actual things that get Cytex seem to bear no resemblance to the list that was published of things we're considering. As the committee goes, we investigated this; it's too hard. We investigated this; it's six things deserve it, so we're going to consider it a bit more. Or we investigated this and discover this other thing that we didn't even know about that's really awesome, and we'll give it to that instead.
Or we discovered the submission was actually prior art being done by this person, right?
Yeah. Though I think the site, don't get me wrong, I do think the SciTech committee do an outstanding job. And we were lucky enough to be at the DigiProbe day for SIDGRAPH, where there was a whole keynote on the process of the SciTechs. And I think it was one of the first times the SciTechs have actually been discussed in terms of the machinations that go into how something gets considered. And I can back up, not only was that kind of a very entertaining speech and, you know, obviously pretty informative, but everybody I've spoken to that's won SciTechs very much validated that there is a really good investigation process, and no one felt like, you know, that was half-baked or that nobody bothered to, you know, sort of poke around. In fact, there'd be follow-ups on follow-ups, and people were like, wow, these guys are like really, really, you know, pushing hard to kind of get the exact timing of who did what and where.
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I was actually speaking when we were doing our podcast and coverage of the Box Trolls. I was chatting with the guys, and, you know, the SciTech team was actually up in Portland that day to actually meet with them about the rapid prototyping, because that's the kind of research and background and work that goes into the SciTechs. Very, very different from... there's a lot of work that goes in the Oscars, but very, very different from the process of nominating a film and having a film go up for an Academy Award. There's a whole bunch of work that's done to suss those out, from the research, the history, whether it really truly transforms movie production and the filmmaking craft. And it is volunteer time for the people who take part
in
that.
That's the point I was going to make. Yeah, that's a really good point. They work really hard to do that, yeah.
So, they are not phoning it in. And I think that's, I think why you and I really love and respect the SciTechs is a large part because of how serious they take it.
But that being said, as we're sitting here right now, no friggin' idea what's going to get nominated.
It is. That is very true.
Sorry. I was going to say the other thing I wanted to flag on the show this week is that... if you guys have friends that maybe you're interested in PhD, John's posted one of the classes from the Dark Art of Digital Beauty work up on our blog, as it were, on FX PhD. So it also appears on the homepage of FX Guide, but it's, of course, on fxphd.com. So that's a class that is taken from the course, and it's just freely available to anyone to look at. We do this from time to time. I'm going to do one from background after this. And it's just a chance so that, you know, if somebody says, hey, what do the classes look like? You can just say, hey, this is an example of the sort of stuff people are doing. And that, I think it's a completely valid and reasonable thing to do. It also helps people out when, you know, they're sort of talking to others and saying, hey, I'm finding this kind of good. Because we do obviously not want people reposting and sending copies of classes around the place, because that's not part of the agreement that we have with you guys. And you tend to respect that really, really well. Yep. So I do appreciate that. But this is a way of saying, hey, if you want to know what background is about, if you want to know what you know, the new courses look like, here are some classes that you can access. And we've done that, I think, maybe the last six or seven terms, John? We've sort of posted one or two every term around this time.
Yeah, it is. And it is a good way for letting people outside PhD know what it's about. I mean, you guys who, in general, listen to this podcast are members of FX PhD or past members. But it's really a good way to provide a bit of insight into what the actual course materials are. We have the a-week videos. We have snippets on the course information page. But I think this kind of takes it to the next level so that people can understand. And, you know, we're very cognizant, both Mike and I, of, you know, we're not diminishing the value of your membership. That's why we don't give a ton of them away for free or multiple classes within an individual course. But we feel this is kind of a sensible way of giving people, sharing with people what FX PhD is all about, with a respect for you guys actually paying and becoming members.
Yeah, The other one, I guess, on that score is that we've been starting to ramp up doing more stuff on Facebook and posting links to stuff there. So if you haven't gotten around to... that's a combined FX Guide, FX PhD Facebook page. Now, it doesn't replace our forums, and when it's not an indicative of any kind of significant move. It's just that we know that a lot of people are on Facebook, and it's a good way for new people to join us. So we've mentioned this in the past, but if you want to like us on Facebook, I don't normally ask for that, but I mean, for some things, I have no idea why you would want to like something, right? Like, you know, there's my train stations. There's like my train station. I'm like, why would I want to do that? But at least here, you will get alerts on new stories and stuff that are coming out, and things like these free classes and that sort of stuff. That's the sort of stuff we post links to on Facebook. And so, it's a very helpful thing to do.
And like currently, you get a couple happy snaps of Mike and Ben filming from the DLP course in the car.
Well, we're going to film some stuff from the digital makeup this tomorrow. So we'll post
on
Facebook.
That's right.
Yeah, we're doing digital makeup shoot. So, yeah.
And the idea behind that, Mike, is to shoot it perfectly, right? So that, you know, it's perfect for post. No, okay. Not so much.
I was thinking, Nathaniel. Where are you going with this?
The idea is from Nathaniel is that he wants something hard. He wants some flares, some stuff to fix. You know, he wants a challenge.
I can flare it, baby.
He does not want an easy fix, so... again, that's that, you know, we all know that that's the stuff where you really earn your chops. So I'll be interested to see that. I've actually enjoyed this course. I actually had some people in the digital makeup course over on the Flame Logic group on Facebook, which is actually another cool, nice Facebook page for flame artists, asking whether that course is kind of suitable for people in flame and not just Nuke. And while there is quite a bit of work that's done utilizing some of the vector paint, I think philosophically watching the courses, and we may have talked about this, you actually get a lot out of the course. I mean, if you don't use Nuke, I mean, whether you're using After Effects or whether you're using Flame or whatever, the way that Nathaniel kind of presents the stuff and his approach to things, I think if, at least for me, I can watch that and say, okay, well, I get that, but I can use this tool in Flame or even the tool in After Effects. I wouldn't necessarily do that in After Effects to actually apply that principle or technique utilizing these different tools. So while it's marketed certainly as a new course, I think the reality of it is anyone can learn really useful techniques from this course. That's what I think is one of the cool things about it.
Yeah. There's a number of courses that I guess that are like that, that you can take stuff out of because of the approaches. And very much it's the case that we don't want to just produce courses that are like, press this button, press that. Because quite frankly, that normally is available in the manuals. So it's more like techniques. Sometimes it's not even application specific at all. But there are definitely lessons you can pull out of stuff. But at the end of the day, it's normally better to identify a particular... app that is going to be something that some people can go along with so that people know going into the course.
Yeah, it is. And there are different levels of learning. Like if you're not an experienced flame artist, potentially there's less for you to learn that would be applicable. I mean, because you don't really know the tools very well in flame. You're still learning them and don't know all the ins and outs. Sometimes it's difficult to actually apply those techniques if you don't know the main app really well. So obviously your first step is to know your app of choice or the one that you do every day. But then I think once you do that and you have a really solid foundation of knowledge and when you're working that app, you reach this point, Mike, you know, where you don't actually have to think about doing anything. You know, you're not actually wondering what button to push or whatever. Once you get to that point, that's where I feel that you can take approaches from whether it's an FX Guide TV app where we'll say watching Nuke, some demo at IBC or NAB or something like that, watch some techniques there and say, okay, I can apply that in After Effects or I can apply that in Nuke. But you really do have to have, I feel, you know, a strong intermediate to advanced knowledge level in your app of choice before you can do that really effectively.
Yeah. I think that the thing for me is that that process of being able to think about the problem and not think about the buttons is just such a great place to be. But it does take some time to get there. If you're not there yet, don't panic. It's not like it can take a while.
Yeah, it can. But I mean, yes. But if you're on the job and you're at a studio working Nuke and you're using it 8 to 12 to 14 hours a day. Hopefully you're going to come to that point. Yeah. It is really a liberating feeling. I mean, I remember actually moving from doing online compositing, rolling, multiple disc recorders and a video switcher, layering switcher, the alpha image switcher, and being really comfortable with that. And then seeing Flame and moving over to Flame, and it was like, oh my God, now all of a sudden I have to start thinking again. But then, a year later, once I hit that stride, I'm like, yes, it just feels so comfortable to sit down and create as opposed to worrying about that. So you'll get there at some point. Just need to keep after it.
Hey, just as an aside, I saw something really interesting in the Telegraph in the UK about the Foundry. Did you see that?
I did not. I'm going to look now.
Okay, so Bill Collis gets... No, don't, because I want to ask you. Bill Collis got interviewed, right? Do you want to guess how many clients, customers, the Foundry are quoted as having in an article in the Telegraph, which, not to say that that's true, but that's what they say.
How many clients they have? How many
how many customers the Foundry has? Interesting question, isn't it?
Not users, customers.
Well, they say in the... It's a quote from Bill Collis, and he says the word clients. From Disney to Pixar to Industrial Light and Magic to Double Negative that use our software, quote CEO Bill Collis. Yeah?
Okay, I'm just going to come way off.
Well, the trouble with that is that I wouldn't ask if it wasn't a big number, right?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm thinking. Well, I don't. 10,249.
Yeah, 20,000.
Wow. Not even half there.
20,000 and 90% of that is outside the UK. Well, that makes sense, the 90% outside the UK, I guess. Mm-hmm. What it might be said, like a slightly bigger percentage was homegrown. But yeah. So that's been interesting.
Wow.
They've grown between 20 and 30% each year since inception. And they have a turnover of, want to guess?
A turnover on?
£20 million on 270 employees. You don't normally get an insight into a company like that, do you?
Wow.
I mean, they don't normally publish those numbers.
No.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive. And of course, that does include Moto, or the former as well.
Yeah, yeah. But 240...
Still, that's still amazing.
Yeah, 240 staff is pretty serious. Because you and I started dealing with the Foundry when it was literally two guys. It was Simon and Bruno.
Yep.
And we visited them when they were making plugins, and it was, I'm not making it up, two guys. And Simon had really, really, no, Bruno had really, really long hair. Simon had hair that went straight up in the air. Quite a lot of it, but it went straight up in the air. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. Good on them.
Yeah, but, very much so.
You kind of get numbers on Adobe and certainly on Autodesk because they're publicly listed companies. They're sort of completely different in terms of transparency. But I'm kind of interested in that.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty amazing, actually. That is a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
It does. It's funny going back when they were on, was it Wardour Street? Where was it with the floor that was like the half floor?
Yeah.
You remember that? Yeah. That was back like dozens of people.
Yeah.
Counting
them. Well, the 270 is spread. Obviously, as you're right, it includes the Moto crowd. But, that includes the sales offices, which they have sales offices in LA and San Fran. No, they have up in San Fran, there's some sales, but it's mainly Moto's offices and then Shanghai, apparently.
Yeah, in LA, they have quite a few people in the office down the street from where I live. Been there many times. And then also multiple locations throughout the states as well.
Yeah.
So. Wow, that's really interesting. I did find the article. I did the search for the Foundry and nothing came up, but I did the search for Bill Collis.
Yes, if you want to search for it, look for Harry Potter to Guardians of the Galaxy, British firm behind Hollywood blockbusters. Anyway, it's not, I wouldn't, speak out of turn, but it's published, right? So I do think it's interesting to get an idea how big companies are and how big the industry is. And the main thing that I took out of that was the 20,000 clients because, it's easy to... I've heard in the past various estimates of how big the industry is, and I think it's easy to get transfixed on just the big effects houses. But, of course, there's so many people beyond that. The long tail, as it were, is enormous for visual effects and smaller, cooler, more independent facilities than just the obviously great but big houses like the ILMs and Weta's.
Yeah, that's quite impressive, actually. As I said, mine was 10,200 and something.
I do, yeah. Yeah. As I say, it's a flawed approach, right? Like, you know, you wouldn't ask the question if the number wasn't
right.
It's six. Really?
Yeah, for the clients. Yeah, not the case.
Excellent. Okay, well, we should probably wrap up, but we're not going to be around next week, guys, because it's break week, and we'll be back the week after.
Yes, we've been incredibly busy, at least, I mean, Mike has too, but yes, it's every second of the day has been working on the, seems like, working on both my class as well as the web switchover. So, time to get back to that. Figure out SSH logins, all that fun kind of stuff. Hey, one actually really quick thing. Those of you who are members of our previous term, the July term, we're sending out links to our survey this week. So be on the lookout for that. We really, really hope you'll take the time to fill out the surveys about our courses that you took at FXPhD. Really useful for us in determining future directions, as well as, you know, letting us know what we could do better. We really take that kind of feedback to heart, and you can leave that information anonymously if you'd like, but if you'd also like us to contact you, you can leave your information as well, and we're happy to be getting in touch with you directly to speak more about it. So that's coming out this week. Take the time. It takes a minute of your time to actually just go through the most basic part of the survey, and for that, we appreciate it. If you want to spend more time providing more in-depth feedback with our essay questions, feel free to do so as well. We appreciate that. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.
See you guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.